Mini episode 1609 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1609. This is FDH Lounge managing partner Rick Morris. And we have with us here one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries and one of our longest-running ones, our good pal, the author and proprietor of Sportsology, Russ Cullen. We're here to talk about and to preview the 2023 Stanley Cup playoffs. It's that time again. They are just upon us here, and we are going to have a number of, I think, absolutely amazing series. Some first-round series that I think are going to be real, real nail-biters, and then from the second round on, it just looks like it could be really, really huge this year. And we do have a prohibitive favorite, at least on paper, as we discussed in our NHL stretch run preview. Of course, in Boston, who had just an absolutely historic season. But as history has taught us, they are assured nothing at this point here. So I know that those are notes that would come as sour and discordant to our great friend FDH Lounge original dignitary Chris Galloway, but it's true. Nothing is promised, nothing is assured in this world, as we have seen with Tampa Bay a couple of years ago and a dominant season. My Detroit Red Wings in 95-96. In those recent examples, history almost mitigates against Boston a little bit, but we'll be looking at that and much, much more with our good pal Russ Cullen. Russ, great to have you in, my man, and we got a lot to look forward to with this year's Stanley Cup playoffs.
We do. I'm looking forward to it. I think the season's been really good. There was a lot of, you know, small factors at the end of the season that can really set a team up for the Cup. So, yeah, some unexpected things have definitely been happening.
Yes, there have been. And we will be chronicling, of course, all of that. We'll be releasing once the final playoff bracket is set here. We have a little bit of wobbling still on this last night here in the Central Division. Probably by about the time this show is posted, you will be able to check out on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com the 2023 FDH NHL end of regular season breakdown. And, of course, you and I have a beta copy of that right now. And yes. I will be referring to that a little bit here for some of the statistical notes on it. And just to note as we're going along here, different categories that are represented on there, the FDH power rankings, and then from there, a lot of standard statistics and some advanced ones, SRS, power play percentage, penalty kill percentage, FF percentage, shot percentage, save percentage, goals scored, and goals against per game. So in terms of looking at this, Russ, just on a 50,000-foot level here, of course, the number one team in the league, of course, in terms of record and everything else like that, they end up manifesting a first tier all to themselves, the Boston Bruins here. Really very little in the way of any type of statistical flaws here, even relatively speaking. The Fenwick 4 percentage, they're ninth in the league, and power play percentage, 13th in the league. Everything else is top five. Actually, shot percentage, fifth. Everything else is first or second from there. So on paper, an absolutely overwhelming favorite, the likes of which you so rarely see coming into the playoffs.
Yeah, and against the year against Vancouver, when they won the Cup, their power play was awful in the Stanley Cup. Brutal.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter. I don't even know if they had a goal in the Stanley Cup, and it didn't matter.
Yeah, they may not have, and that's the thing, and they've always been a team with a very, very, very stout defense through the course of the last 15 years or so, this great run of hockey that they've had. And, of course, penalty kill, they are first in the league, no surprise.
Yeah, Yeah, and the power play now with Lindholm added, it just made it that much better. I like Grizzlick a lot. So they, you know, you have McAvoy and Lindholm, which is two of the best in the league, on the same team now with the puck movement and everything else. It's a big advantage for them.
It really, really is. And then you go from there, and it's a second tier in this order, and they're bunched up relatively close. Dallas, New Jersey, Edmonton, the New York Rangers, Toronto, Colorado, Tampa Bay, Carolina. I do think for most people, when they're looking at the Stanley Cup playoff contenders for this year, contenders to make the finals or win at all, my guess is most people are sort of confining it to that nine.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I don't think there's a sweep that's going to happen in the first round. I think there's going to be a couple that could go five, and in this day and age, that's probably like a sweep.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some really good matchups. I mean, I think there's potential for at least three series to go seven.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're looking at this here, starting the furthest over geographically here, that's where I see a five-game series here, a gentleman's sweep. I've got Boston over Florida in five, albeit I think that could be a very, very tight five-game series as far as it goes. I don't see Boston blowing them out in any games. I see Florida making them work for it a lot. I could go back and forth on Tampa Bay and Toronto because I have a feeling this might be the year that Toronto gets to the second round, but I've been saying that for a while, and I think I said that last year. And
you did.
I felt like I was more right than I usually was, and I've made this point before. Like, Tampa Bay had to sweat for it more than they generally did. You could tell watching it. But, I mean, at this point, until proven otherwise, I'm going to say Tampa Bay. So, Boston, Tampa Bay, and what could be a second round for the ages. Is that what you're seeing play out?
Well, right now, I definitely think Boston. I do think five is the right number. And I think it's one of those things where, I don't know, I think they're going to waste a game going with Alex Lyon, even though he's the hot guy. I get it. They have to go with him right now. And then I think there will be some uncertainty. You know, Omar, even if he's not what he's been in the regular season, if he's close, it'll be fine. And if he has trouble, they have Swayman. So they're in good shape. And Florida, I think, had this torrid streak to get into the playoffs. And a lot of times, if you have to do that on a prolonged basis, like you want to be hot going into the playoffs, don't get me wrong. But sometimes when you're fighting life and death for like a month, it can zap you. And I think that's what's going to happen against a veteran team like the Bruins.
And I will say, and I will hearken back to, and perhaps some people thought it was sour grapes in the early 2000s, when I would make the case on various shows on the Sports Talk Network that they should really do reseeding going into the playoffs to make it fair. Maybe seed off of the last 20 to 30 games, because my Red Wings, that would put it away early and would have a month or so just to kind of get ready for the playoffs, keep getting punched in the nuts by, like, whether it be Anaheim or anybody else coming up there, like from the 7 or 8 seed that's been playing for their lives for the last month. Like, I remember making the case at one point that it was like it almost didn't seem fair to the team that was out in front because they had no momentum and it always belonged to the other team.
Nobody feels bad for those Red Wings. These are the sourest of sour grapes, my friend.
I can always get reactions from people when I talk about my feelings about the Red Wings, so it's always worth doing. But the Red Wings, of course, coming up on the periphery at best of the playoff hunt here. Certainly everybody in Winged Wheel Nation is going to be looking for more next year. It'll be a year five under Steve Eye, and for all of the great progress that's been made, it's going to be time to start turning that into actual results. But, back to the here and now. We saw a really, really epic playoff series last year in the Met division here with Carolina and the Rangers. And I think we're going to be headed to that again. I've got Carolina over the Islanders in five. I think that could be a pretty rugged series, similar to Boston, Florida. A five-game series, it doesn't necessarily feel like a blowout, but that's what I'm going to go with. Rangers in New Jersey, I'm just going to say it now. You know, it feels like 1994. I see this one going seven. I think it's going to be a barn burner. I think it's going to be one of the things that grabs the attention of New York in a way that's really kind of hard to do. But I think it could be an epic series for the ages. And I do see your Rangers coming out on top in the end. Do you agree that we could be headed for another Carolina Rangers round two series?
I mean, could be, yes. I don't know if I'm really leaning towards that, but I will say that I can see Carolina winning in seven against the Islanders.
Okay.
I think they've regrouped enough to show us at the end that they still have the best defense in the league. And, you know, the addition of Brent Burns was massive. They didn't get the guys, you know, that they wanted for the playoffs. You know, Pacioretty was going to be a hope. He's always hurt. So that didn't work out for him, and losing Svechnikov hurt. But I think they finally have rebounded from that to some degree. So based on that, I'm going to go in seven. Honestly, I'm not picking New Jersey, New York right now. I have to look at more things.
Okay.
I think this is the most fascinating series of the first round, and there's more for me to look at. And so I'm not ready to make that pick yet.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it just really, there's such top-end skill on both sides here. New Jersey, certainly the younger of the two teams.
They got faster.
They got off to such an amazing start this year. Again, sort of a little bit of a mini version, I would say, of Boston, in the sense that we talked about Boston at the time of our stretch run breakdown of, like, you and I coming into the season, like a lot of people, thought that maybe they were sort of approaching the sell-by date of this run here. Boston doing what they did after the way the last couple of seasons ended, definitely a surprise to be this dominant. And New Jersey, to get off to the start they got off to this year, I felt the same level of surprise.
I felt only a little surprise. I was just worried about the goaltending. I was not worried about guys like Hughes and Bratt, who were great last year. Dougie Hamilton, you know, he's going to be on my on my Norris ballot. So they have a ton of talent, and they added Timo Meier. So I wasn't worried about that. I was just worried about goaltending. If they were going to get goaltending, they were going to be good. And Vanacek's done good. He's done well. So no big issue there. It's just a matter of, do they have enough?
Right.
I mean, that's the question, and it's a question for a lot of teams. It's not just them. But the one thing, if they just get mediocre goaltending, they do have the ability to overcome it now, because they do have a strike offense.
Yes, they do. They do, and they really have put it out there and really put a lot of points on the board. Fourth in the league in goals scored this year. So, really, when you look at the New Jersey, the great teams of the past, and it's been a while since we could say that. Of course, they were primarily defensively oriented for much of that run here, but the explosiveness of this New Jersey team, they are a little bit different than the Devils teams of years gone by. And speaking of that time frame when New Jersey was riding high, I look at the Central Division here, and I'm looking ahead to a second-round matchup. We still don't know, as of recording time here, what the first round matchups are going to be, but there's nothing at this point that deters me from saying Colorado and Dallas in the second round as far as what the matchups could be. And that of course, was an epic matchup around the time of the turn of the century, and everything old is new again. And Dallas is a team where, again, we know about Colorado, we know about their skill level, and as a Red Wings fan, it makes me vomit to put them over, but I have to. They are the defending champions. For Dallas, again, sort of like New Jersey, sort of like Boston, all of these teams in different ways, though, a little bit of a surprise to me, because Dallas was another team where I was kind of like, they might have passed their sell-by date. That shock finals run that they did in the bubble a couple of years back might be the peak of their run. Ironically, what was that? I think a year after Boston. So these teams that I was sort of like ready to write off as like maybe the best days of this core have kind of come and gone. For Dallas, really, really coming back strong.
Yeah, I mean, Jake Ottinger's had a big thing to do about that. Robertson's become a big star in the league. Rupe Hintz has kept up his good play. And Ben and Sagan are still going strong. They've recovered at least to some degree from their injuries, and they're pretty damn productive. So, and they made some other slight moves, too, that were good. I think they were going to beat Seattle, so I would pick them over Seattle in six. If that's the matchup, I'm good with that. As far as Colorado, I do and did love them adding Georgiev. I told people he could be a number one. He had that number one mentality on the Rangers more than he had a backup mentality. So I didn't have any questions about that. And Minnesota's good, man. They have really good defense. They've been very surprising. I don't know what the exact status is of Kaprizov for the playoffs. Have you heard?
No, the last I heard, that was still a little bit up in the air. And that is right. Obviously, that is probably the variable in that series, because Minnesota's a team where, again, and I say this from a rooting standpoint, if they're playing Colorado in the first round, obviously how much I'd be rooting for the Wild, and feeling that they'd have a puncher's chance with a Kaprizov who's ready to go and is somewhat representative of his ability level and not being dragged down by injury. But this, I don't think we know at the moment.
Right. So, I mean, I would say, you know, if Kaprizov plays, it's Avs in seven. If he doesn't, it could be in six.
Yeah, that's about where I have it slotted. And for Dallas, I was looking at this, and this is one of these things. I am fond, as always, as I always say on the show, of cross-sport analogies and things that may seem kind of random to people sometimes here. But in looking at this, I'm looking at Joe Pavelski, because I'm looking at the year that he had, the resurgence. And this is a guy, it's so funny, because like he has sniffed it a couple times, probably at least four or five times, but has never been a point-a-game guy. But at age 38, he sniffed it yet again. And after looking like, again, somebody who a couple of years ago looked like his best days had kind of gone by.
He had a resurgence, for sure.
He did. And it's a thing where you look at his long career of being really, really, really good, but never transcendent. And it makes me think, I always have to say, this is without the roids, because the first thing you think of now with Rafael Palmeiro, because of his big mouth, is the roids. But what was he known for before that? A guy who was really, really good for a long period of time, but never transcended. That's kind of how I see Pavelski. If he can help lead them to a cup at age 38, what does that do for his Hall of Fame case? Does that push him over the top into the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, it would push him over the top.
Okay. I had that kind of sense, but okay. You especially being the hockey historian, I wanted to ask that question.
Yeah, he's well regarded. So yeah, I think if he did that, that would answer a lot of questions.
Okay, so this is a Pavelski legacy thing here in this postseason. He has a chance to do that. Okay, all right. That was my instinct, but I knew I wanted to ask you about it. In the Pacific division here, which, again, sometimes is a grab bag of teams that are really good and teams that are just kind of like there, it seems like it's been a pretty solid division on balance this year. Seattle doing in year two what a lot of the hipsters thought they'd do in year one, which was to mimic Vegas's immediate success. But Edmonton, I don't know that they have necessarily answered all of the questions about what they can do defensively, 18th in the league in goals against. But offensively, I mean, this team just gets better and better year after year, with some of their top guns led, of course, by Connor McDavid. So I've got a second round here that's going to end up being Vegas and Edmonton. So I'm going chalk on that one here. How do you see the initial series shaking out for them?
Yeah, I think Edmonton can beat the Kings in five. Mm-hmm. Edmonton's been great down the stretch. I have faith in Skinner and in Campbell. I think they both, Skinner's been good all year. Campbell was bad for a lot of the year, but now has turned that around. So not knowing exactly which way they're going to go, maybe they're going to start with Skinner. I'm fine with it. They've added a lot of depth. They have a lot of other scoring. They are, you know, getting an amazing year now at Ryan Nugent Hopkins.
Yes.
Which is a really big deal for them. So, I look at it and I'm like, yeah, Edmonton's going to be hard to stop, and they may have a path to the conference final.
Very much so, because as we look ahead to the conference semifinals now, having gone through the divisions, let's start here furthest east. I've got Boston over Tampa Bay in six. I think this could be a very, very strong series. I could certainly see it going seven. It's a thing where the mileage of Tampa Bay, all of the long springs that they've been having playing well into June the last couple of years, that's one of the things I think that could keep it from going seven games.
I'm not sure how this is going to go yet, and so I'm going to hold off because I really want to see who's injured, who isn't. But I would say that if it's Boston-Tampa, yeah, I probably would pick Boston, but I got to look at it a little bit more.
Oh, yeah. We are early days in this. They are actually finishing the regular season tonight as we are taping this, to be sure. In the Metro division here, I've got the Rangers over Carolina in seven. My instinct going into the year was to pick Carolina coming out of this division, and I think they had been my choice to win the Cup for coming into the season and sticking to my guns for a good part of the way. But particularly, the big trades made by your Rangers along the way kind of swayed me on that one here. And I know you're unsure as of yet that the Rangers will even make it this far, so I know you don't have a pick. But as far as either the Devils or the Rangers matching up against Carolina, what do you think?
Well, I think Carolina could beat the Devils. I do think they would have trouble with the Rangers for sure. And I think the fact that because the Rangers would have that little edge in net and can get more scoring going and have a lot of toughness, even though Carolina may have the better defense, I think the Rangers' clutch scoring ability is more now. I mean, you know, Kane's not the same player, but you think that, you know, when the chips are down, he might be able to get one or two. They have other guys that have really good playoff experience at this point, and even someone fluky like Tyler Mott could help them out. So, you know, that would be beneficial, I think, for the Rangers.
That's one of those things, too, where you look at the series last spring, and you look at it again here, and sometimes rivalries in hockey spring up in ways that you don't necessarily imagine, and then certainly like in a geographic sense, Rangers and Carolina would never be anything first off the top of your head as far as a rivalry, but the trajectory of these franchises now and then the next couple of years forward, this is something that could be, if it materializes as a series, another important step in what I think could be one of the league's big rivalries in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think it could be. I think you're right about that.
Because, yeah, they're both on the same trajectory, I think, more or less, and both have a lot of great young players, too, still young in a lot of cases. So they may be competing against each other for a couple of years to come here. As much as this, again, pains my Red Wings-loving soul here, looking at the Central Division here, I would say Colorado over Dallas in an epic seven-game series. I think, again, the way that the Stars have materialized this year, what you said about Robertson really stepping up, I think I asked you about him during our stretch run preview. Like, you know, if you felt like this guy had legitimately made the turn into being that elite-tier guy, and you said that he had done that, and that the results have borne it out this year. Notwithstanding that, there are not a lot of teams that are as deep offensively as Colorado, that remains the case, and that remains probably the primary reason I would go with them in this series.
Yeah, I would lean that way too, and I think it would go seven simply because Colorado doesn't have Gabriel Landeskog, their captain.
Yeah.
If they did, I think it would be quicker than that. But that's not taken away from Dallas, and again, we still don't know how McCarr is going to be.
Yes.
I mean, I know he's skating, so that's another factor too, but even so, Colorado still has some really nice pieces, and I think even if McCarr is 75%, they're in pretty good shape.
Exactly, and there's a lot, of course, in the world of hockey that does get kayfabed right up until the puck drop of Game 1.
Oh, yeah.
As much as I'm, you know, of the nature of where I would point to hockey for that, I will say, in fairness, it happens in other sports. I say this, of course, as a massive Cavs fan, where everybody is waiting to see if Julius Randle is going to go in Game 1 tomorrow night as we're taping this here. So it does happen in other sports.
Well, don't forget about LeBron's bad ankle, too.
There is that, yeah. You always have questions about these things here and how bad these things are going to end up being. And, yeah, it just seems like, again, from the way our conversation has been, it seems like there's an awful lot of them heading into this year's Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, there's three or four big ones.
Yeah.
The only one that we know about for certain now was Landeskog.
Yes.
They counted them out, so.
Yes. That domino fell, and it must be pretty serious for them to have done that at this point and given up the ghost on it.
And he's getting surgery now.
Yeah.
He tried to put her off.
Yeah, and that's probably the smart move. Looking at the other conference semifinal here in the Pacific Division, I've got it being Edmonton and Vegas. And with all due respect to Vegas, I've got it being Edmonton in five. This is one where I just think that with the overwhelming firepower that Edmonton has, one of the curious stats, though, maybe the most curious stat that any team has, I'm looking at this matrix here, Edmonton 19th in the penalty kill this year. I thought they were maybe a little closer to middle of the pack, and you could say that maybe 19th is not that far off of it. But that is the kind of thing that could give Vegas a little bit of hope here. But Edmonton, of course, when you're looking at special teams, as you would expect, first in the power play. So I look at this series here, and I just don't know that Vegas is going to have the power, the firepower to keep up with them. 13th in goals scored. They may have to hope for everything that they can do on special teams.
Yeah, I think they would. I am curious to see, are we going to see Logan Thompson? Is it just Jonathan Quick? I mean, I don't have tons of faith in Jonathan Quick, whereas in Thompson I do. So that really does affect how I feel about Vegas. So that's why I'm kind of waiting till the end here. So, but it's a heck of a matchup.
It absolutely is. And at this point here, you'd be having nothing but good ones going through. And the conference finals in the East, I've got it as being Boston and the Rangers, with the Rangers, of course, having made it this far last year. This is where I'd see them going out again, Boston in six. Any of these series, with the possible exception of Florida, although, again, Florida was such a dominant team just a year ago, but it just seems like they still haven't fully recovered from that epic fall in the first round. But with the possible exception of Florida, every series is a tripwire for Boston, as we have indicated here. I keep picking them through these series here, and you could very easily sketch out a scenario where the Rangers get over, because, again, this is a thing where Boston hasn't gotten that good of a look at the Rangers since they made some of the big pickups at the trading deadline.
Well, I mean, you're now, like, giving me flashbacks of the 72 Stanley Cup. And even though this is a conference final, and a lot of people think, and I'm one of them, that the Rangers could have beat Boston then had John Rattel not had a broken ankle. And even though he played a bit, he was not great. So I don't know. I think this series would be a pick'em. I could never call it in six, I would tell you that.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I mean, if it went seven, I wouldn't be shocked. In the Western Conference here, I've got Colorado over Edmonton in six. And that is a sign that I think that almost exclusively with Edmonton's, and it's hard to look at a team like them and say offensive improvement from where they were a year ago. But like you said, with Nugent Hopkins and some of the other things along the way here, Connor McDavid finding new heights in his career, which is a scary, scary thing. Again, I think...
Is that guy good? Do you think Connor McDavid's good?
Yeah. I think this kid can play in this league, Russ. I think he can stick.
Even though he's not a Red Wing?
Okay. Yeah. You know, it might have taken until this year, but he made a believer out of me, Russ. But,
right. Just making sure. 157 points. Yeah, right.
Yeah, let's talk about this here. 153 points, 64 goals, 89 assists, plus minus a 22, which maybe says something about their defense, that it's not a plus minus of like 40. But, you know, and doing it here. Now, again, you know, a shot percentage of 18.2. So it's a thing where you don't know. Of course, Dreisaitl, 21.1. So both of those are... Because I always regard that, you talk about cross-sport analogies again, I always regard that as a little bit like batting average on balls in play. So, you know, you get too far away from 300 on either side. You know, I don't know what the proper median is considered to be for shot percentage, but, you know.
The shooting percentage, I would say that you really want to be around 14.
Okay.
Like, that's good.
I was going to guess 12 or 13. Like, do you think 12 or 13 might be like the median for really good players?
Yeah, I think it's close.
Okay. All right. So neither one of them might replicate this kind of season ever again, although, again, McDavid's 26, Dreisaitl's 27. So there's always the possibility of it. And plus, I mean, their skill level is absolutely insane. So much like how some hitters can, you know, like batting average on balls in play, that didn't mean anything to a guy like Ichiro, right? He'd just keep putting up the sky-high numbers every year. So, and to a certain extent, that's kind of where these guys are, I think, on shot percentage, of where they're a little bit exempt from some of the normal kind of things here. But with this offense being at an even higher...
Just as an example, I looked up McKinnon because he just scored his 40th goal, and he's, you know, in game 71.
Yeah.
So, pretty amazing year. And, you know, his shooting percentage a little low. He's actually at 10.9.
Yeah.
When he had 97 points in 2017-18, he was at 13.7. So, yeah, seeing that makes me think, all right, 12 is probably, if you get over 12, that's probably where you're really shining.
Yeah, exactly. And, again, you get, like, way beyond that, and that's almost certainly where the luck is kicking in to a certain degree. And that's the thing. Boy, this whole team, actually, I'm looking at, like, Nugent Hopkins, 18.4. I mean, talk about...
Yeah, that's crazy, because there's just not enough shots to go around, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, like, every time these guys are shooting at the net, they're scoring. It's, like, incredible. But, you know, you look at that there, and, like, I think they have the firepower to go a little longer against Colorado, but I'm not at the point, you know, much as I'd like to in my heart of hearts. It feels like too big of a leap of faith as far as that goes, because, again, Colorado can't match them for firepower, but Colorado is more of a complete team.
Yeah, they're more of a complete team. They play differently. I think they still have more jam than Edmonton does, and I think that would matter, especially getting to that point in the playoffs. So, yeah, I think that would be a big deal, too.
Yeah, and then you get into the finals. And I've got it being, and I think
it's
a lot
final.
Of people, final.
I want to turn this into the NBA.
That's
the NBA
true.
Is finals. Punctually and grammatically incorrect. And it's Stanley Cup final. If you say that another
I'm much better than most at sticking to that. I slipped up here, but I'm going to put myself over. And if you look at our past show, things we've done here, I'm pretty good about saying 2021 Stanley Cup final. Like, yeah, you caught me in an off moment there, Russ, but I'm better than most.
Everybody has.
I'm better than most. I'm going to take the opportunity of my slip up to paradoxically put myself over for being like probably 95% good on that one. But a lot of people would probably be picking this. I would guess this would be considered, I mean, I know it's the chalk in the Eastern Conference, to pick Boston. My guess is it would be the chalk in the West, regardless of record, because Colorado's the defending champion. Much like a year ago, you would have, of course, the defending champion. It was Tampa Bay in there against a team poised to take it from them. And in looking at this here, again, a lot of star power up and down the line. And Pasternak, of course, is a guy that can match MacKinnon and these other guys. Firepower
for 61 goals, I'd say. Sure,
Firepower for firepower. And, again, Boston being, of course, the better defensive team here in the mix. And although, again, Colorado only fourth in goals against. So that's a thing where just in looking at it, and this is just a fluky thing. Yeah, I'm looking at it. Colorado's 17th in shot percentage. So they've made it this far. And this is one of these things. And, of course, FDH Lounge dignitary Ben Chu will a lot of times get on me for what he feels is my incorrect use of progression to the mean, regression to the mean. But this is one of these things where Colorado being 17th in shot percentage in the regular season and still being poised and in the position they're in, there's part of me that would be a little bit scared to face them right now, beyond what I would normally be, of course, because of that. The shots that aren't going in the regular season, do they start going in now? This is the thing where Ben would say, Rick, things that happened in November and February have nothing to do with what happens now. But you know, and I know, Russ, that, you know, sometimes shots go in, sometimes they don't. There's probably been a disproportionate number of shots that might have gone in that didn't for Colorado. That is one of those things where it might be even scarier to play them at this point if you figure that the regression is going to catch up.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the big thing here is, you know, like we said, there's no Landis Cog.
Yep.
So that's a tough one. But on the plus side, I think, you know, Georgiev is an upgrade in net. So because they had struggles in net in the Stanley Cup last year. So yes. I think that's a big time positive. I do. And I think that could make up the slack for some of the other things that have gone wrong, really.
It could. But in looking at it here, I would say Boston over Colorado in six, which, by the way, it's all a matter of sort of like, you know, prioritizing whatever the things are that you end up despising. So, like, I'm not a Boston guy in any sport, Russ Cohen. I'm not a Boston guy. I'm not a Pittsburgh guy. There's a lot of cities that are on my excrement list. Boston is. So this is a thing where would I be rooting for Boston in this series? Yes, but very reluctantly so. Much like when the Devils played Colorado, because I grew to loathe the Devils after 95. So this is one of these things where in looking at this, I keep saying it past the first round, and that could be famous last words if Florida rises up and does a reversal of a year ago, but past the first round, Boston can get tripped up in any of their next three matchups. At this point, I'm just not picking it to happen. Colorado is the team that I think could come the closest, with the possible exception of the Rangers, to stopping them. But Boston, I give the edge, especially because of the defense that they have and the way that that could prove decisive in a series like this.
I'll look at it this way. I think that with series, if it gets to this point, I think it's kind of like win or leave town for Brad Marchand. That's the kind of match it should be, like a wrestling match. Win or leave town. And honestly, if this matchup happens, I think, and he won't be leaving town. He's obviously going to be a Bruin the rest of his life. I think he would be leaving town temporarily, because I do think Colorado would win. I think by the time they got to this point in the playoffs, I do think they would start to show some wear and tear with some of their older players. And I think, like, even for Bergeron to have to match up against McKinnon, and then who's matching up against Rantanen, I think then you have all of a sudden you start to have problems. So I think that's the issue here. And honestly, that's, if this were the matchup, I think you'd have a repeat champion, which, again, you would hate, because, you know, your team was a repeat champion.
Yep.
And I just say, tough.
Last ones, and that's one more. Yep. That's a reason I'd be rooting against almost any, repeat. Well, actually, no, Tampa Bay. That's right. Tampa Bay took us out of the...
Oh, Tampa too, yeah.
Yeah, that's but nevertheless, seeing Colorado do that and get any kind of glory, I would look at it that way. I will bring it all the way around on this here. You know, you threw that out as a random reference, but I'm going to put a little meat on the bones here of Loser Leaf Town. I'm going to go back to Cleveland Public Hall in the 80s. I, as a youngster there, that my brother and I managed to cajole my parents into taking us there. And they were just like agog at the spectacle of what pro wrestling fans looked like and conducted themselves like. I think it was the main event, which shows you that it was a show without bereft of a lot of star power. It was Rip Rogers against Pistol Pez Whatley, Loser Leaves Town. And I remember that Rip Rogers had a valet named Brenda that everyone was chanting bubble butt at for some reason. But the thing that was funny was Loser Leaves Town. And my mom turns to me at one point and goes, "Don't they all leave town tomorrow?" Yeah. So leave it to my mom to cut through with the real wisdom here. As you have done, of course, yet again with our Stanley Cup playoff preview for 2023 leading up to the Stanley Cup final, singular, which I hope to get you back on, of course, for our Stanley Cup final singular preview in a couple of weeks here. And we got a lot of great hockey to look forward to between now and then.
We do. And I'm really looking forward to it. Looking forward to covering the Cup again. You know, right now I'm voting for my year-end awards. I love this time of year. I respect the hell out of it. And that's why hockey is the greatest sport.
It is an absolutely wonderful sport to watch. And we are about to be flooded in that. That gets started. NBA playoff action getting started. One of the great times of year of just being able to flip around the tube and see all these great games. And it is going to be wonderful. Can't thank you enough, as always, Russ Cohen.
Well, you can thank me, actually, because I told you a couple of years ago that Andre Semenis was going to be a terrific player. And you're like, no, you know what? I'm so sick of these Cleveland trades, because they trade away stars and they never get anything back in return. And I don't know. I think the Guardians may have re-signed this Jimenez guy to like a long-term deal after winning a gold glove. Maybe I saw something wrong.
No,
maybe it's wrong.
You
I
did. You were right about that. And by the way, and I must apologize on Twitter for having broken kayfabe here. I forgot that you do some Mets coverage here. When I accidentally brought up your one-time opinion of Francisco Lindor, let it be known that you and I at one point in time had very opposite views of the trade for opposite reasons.
But he changed the way he's playing, and he had to.
Yeah.
Because that first year, it was still part of the slide, and then he really had to change the way he played.
Yeah.
But to his credit, he has.
Yeah, and well, not only that, again, offensively, he's had that kind of resurgence, and he's proven to be worth the money, I think, in that kind of way. Look, you know, as far as my tribe goes, I mean, Jimenez, Rosario, they have kind of, you know, they've panned out, they've, you know, been good in those spots there. This is still a team that really won't shell out for any kind of power hitting. I mean, you know, throw some money at Josh Bell and act like you're doing something. I mean, it's, you know, it's better than the slappies they had in there, Josh Bell and Zunino, when Zunino's making contact, which is, you know, once every fourth eclipse of the moon, basically. But when he, hey, when he hits the ball, it goes far. So, you know, give him that. But, yeah, with the start of baseball here, too, what a magnificent time of year. And you and I are having fun covering all of these things here. Thank you, my friend, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1609.